From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network, and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. In honorary of the memory of the legendary sports New York Giants beat reporter, Ernie Paladino, he passed away in 2018 after a courageous battle against cancer. He became a close personal friend of mine. He's now a candidate for admission to the Westchester Sports Hall of Fame. He was with the Journal News of Westchester for 33 years, 20 of those years covering the New York Giants. We had him on our show originally on his seminal sports book, what became one of the top sports books ever, Lombardi and Landry, how two of pro football's greatest coaches launched their legends and changed the game forever. We honor Ernie's memory by, again, playing our interview with him on Lombardi and Landry. Did the New York Giants allow to get away coach two assistant coaches who went on to become two of the greatest head football coaches ever? An offensive coordinator by the name of Vince Lombardi and a defensive coordinator by the name of Tom Landry. The little-known story of how two iconic coaches launched their careers on the same team and changed football forever. We look into legends and leadership today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry could not have had two more divergent styles, yet somehow they managed to coexist working for the New York Giants in the mid-1950s under a head coach not much remembered to this day, but who possessed the brilliance to manage and get the most out of two future legendary Hall of Fame coaches. The amazing story of leadership development morphing into legendary status as our subject. This is the first time anyone has delved into this story. We're fortunate to have that sports writer with us now as Ernie Paladino tells us about the greatest tandem of assistant coaches in the history of sport. Welcome, Ernie. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. This is a real privilege to be at the cool kids table for a while.
Well, we're honored to have you. Tell us, it just sounds like a tremendous amount of fun to do this book. Where'd you get the idea, and tell us about how you put it together?
I tell everybody the idea is a product of failure. It came out of a failed proposal. I had done a magazine article for Maple Street Press. That's kind of like a Street and Smith's yearbook type thing that's focused on the Giants in this case. And I had done a piece on famous defensive lieutenants of the Giants, starting from Tom Landry and going through Belichick. The impetus being that Perry Fuel was coming in as the new defensive coordinator in 2010. So it was kind of based around that whole thing. After I'd written this, I looked at my notes and I said, I wonder if there's a book here. I'd never written a book in my life. 33 years at the Westchester Journal News. I was a beat writer, but never written long form or anything like that. And I said, I wonder if there's a book here. So I wrote up a proposal, and my friend at the Daily News, Ralph Facchiano, who had written Eli Manning, The Making of a Quarterback, introduced me to his editor at Skyhorse, the great Mark Weinstein. And he said, send it to Mark. He's a good guy. He'll give you a fair read on it. So I did. And a month later, Mark got back to me and said, you know, you've got two books here. One is never, ever going to sell because it deals with a lot of the Giants losing years. Nobody wants to read that. But there's this whole Lombardi thing going on with the Broadway play and the movies and the ESPN specials and what have you. He says if you can do something about their internship with the Giants, their assistantship with the Giants, the two of them, Lombardi and Landry, you might have a viable proposal here. So I took another month and I did some research on Lombardi. Of course, having been around the Giants all my life, I was born in Westchester, grew up a fan of New York teams. I always knew Lombardi and Landry had coached on the same on the same staff together, but I didn't know much past that. So I did some research, put another proposal together, and Skyhorse Publishing bought it, and I started writing the book. So that's really how it came about. I guess there's a life lesson in there that just because, you know, you fail with one thing doesn't mean it can't be altered to become successful in something else.
And let me just mention the book is Lombardi and Landry, How Two of Pro Football's Greatest Coaches Launched Their Legends and Changed the Game Forever. Ernie's been a sports writer for nearly 50 years, 33 of them with the Journal News in Westchester, New York. And he's been covering the Giants, he told me before we got on, for 23 years. Currently writes Ernie Palladino's Giants Beat for Scout.com, part of Fox Sports Blog Network. And he's a graduate of Fordham University, which was Vince Lombardi's alma mater as well. And in fact, played on the seven granite?
Yeah, seven blocks of granite.
Seven blocks of granite.
37.
I know that my daughter swam.
He was the worst of them too.
Yeah, I know. I read that in your book. I know my daughter swam for Fairfield, and right outside the swim pool there, they have a statue of Lombardi. So which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's the Lombardi Center. Yes, the pool is in the Lombardi Center. It's an athletic center they built just after I got there. They started construction my junior year, and that's where they have their pool and workout rooms and squash courts and what have you.
And now Fordham's been rebuilding their football team for years. Let me digress before we get into Lombardi and Landry. In the materials the publisher sent me along with your book, they said to be sure to ask you, how did you happen to get into a fight with Lawrence Taylor and live to tell the story?
Jen is at work, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, that's my publicist, Jen Dorr. She's a lovely lady and working real hard. But, it's not something I'm particularly proud of, but it happened, and I take it as such. And, it was 1995, where we're talking, 17 years now? Almost 17 years ago. Taylor had been out of football for a couple of years, and Dan Reeves had brought him back in October. The Giants were 0-3 heading into the New Orleans game, and he thought a talk by Lawrence would spur the team or whatever. And so, of course, everybody hears that Lawrence is coming. He's high interest and everything. So about 100 media people show up at practice. And he basically blew us off. He blew us off after practice. He says, "I got nothing to say to you guys," and I wandered off. I was all angry because it was about 5 o'clock and I had a 6 o'clock deadline, and I could see that creeping up. I hadn't written a word because obviously Taylor is going to be the story. So I went after him. Now I'm 5'5", and at the time I was about 170 pounds. But I'm a hot-blooded Italian with a temper and what have you. And we got into a drawing match, and we're about 30 yards away from each other, and I'm yelling at him, and he's yelling at me. And finally, I waved him off with an expletive that we don't say on the radio and what have you. And I turn and start to walk back to the press room to vent. All of a sudden, I hear Taylor screaming, cursing his head off. And I turn around, and he's in his linebacker stance, 30 yards away from me. So I stop, and I turn. I'm not going to run from him. I turned, and he walks over to me, and I stick my finger in his face. I say, "You're wrong, you're wrong." And he grabs me by the throat and says, "Get away from me, you dilly silly bitch." Now I understand silly and I understand bitch, but dilly, I'm still trying to figure that out. Well, we get separated, and I like to say it took Mike Freeman of the Times and Russ Salzberg of Channel 11 to pull me off of Lawrence Taylor. You know, they grab me and drag me off, and I'm cursing like crazy. Meanwhile, every major camera is there. ESPN is there. CNN is there. The local networks are there. They got microphones all over the place. So they're picking all this up. And if you see the tape, it's on tape. If you see the tape, all you hear from me is bleep, 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 bleep. And Vinny Detrani is standing in front of Lawrence Taylor saying, calm down, Lawrence, calm down. And Lawrence is going, that's not necessary, Vinny. So
you got your story.
At least I got my two. I got my 2 cents in anyway. I wound up in 3 books because of it. it's amazing.
We'll be back for our second segment with Ernie Paladino, sports writer for the Journal News, and then online for WFAN.com, covered the Giants for 20 years. We're back with Ernie Paladino, the author of Lombardi and Landry.
All right, let's go back to history now. Tell us, how did Lombardi and Landry get along? How were they able to work together, being such different fellows?
It, you know, I think it was because of Jim Lee Howell that those two got along. I don't think they hated each other. I know they respected each other greatly because in later years Lombardi would say, I learned defense from Landry, and Landry would say, I learned how to win from Lombardi. But I don't think they were great friends, and I really couldn't pin that down. I think one of the great failings of the book, if there is one, I never got to a conclusion that these guys were either great friends or hated enemies, because the opinions were so divergent. Alicia Landry said that the families would get together, Sue Howell and Marie Lombardi and her, and they would have a great time, and she loved Vince, or as he called him then, Vinny. And she said he had a wonderful sense of humor, and he was loud, and he enjoyed a drink and what have you, and Landry was quiet. Pat Summerall told me he doesn't think they exchanged 3 words in the course of a season. That's how divergent the opinions are. And I simply couldn't put a finger on that exact relationship, whether they were great friends or just I think it was more of a competitive respect that they had. And it was held together by Jim Lee Howell, because both of them would badger Howell for practice time and philosophical decisions to go their way, even during the game. When Summerall kicked that field goal, when Summerall kicked the field goal against the Browns in the that won the season finale in 58, mm-hmm. Lombardi didn't. Lombardi wanted to go for it on fourth and ten, after 3 incomplete passes, and Howell decided to send Summerall out for a very long field goal on a very bad day.
How did Jim Lee Howell have the confidence to basically outsource his job to both these guys?
That's exactly what he did. When Howell took over the Giants, they fired Steve Owen after the 53 season. And when Howell took over, he said, I want to run this team like my business. He had a livestock farm in Lenoke, Arkansas, with his brother. And he said, I want to run this team like the farm. I'm going to look at the big picture. He said, I'm going to farm out the strategy. I'll let my assistants take an active part in it. And at this time, he didn't know who his assistants were going to be. He knew he had Landry there, but he didn't know the assistant was going to be Lombardi on offense. So he basically said, I'll take the big picture and let the assistants basically run the team. Sam Huff said, Jim Lee would read you the itinerary, and that was basically his duties. You know, he'd read you the itinerary, and he'd chew you out if you were late for the bus. And even Jim Lee admitted, he said, my main job here is to blow the whistle and pump up the footballs.
You have a great story with Kyle Rote walking by all three of their offices.
Yeah, up in Winooski, Vermont, St. Michael's College. He walks into the dorms one day, the coaching offices, and he walks by one door, and there's Lombardi breaking down tapes, and he walks by another door, and there's Landry breaking down tapes and doing his cerebral stuff, and then he walks by Howell's office, and he's sitting there reading the papers.
Amazing. Did you uncover how the two guys were perceived coming into these jobs and as coordinators before they became legends in retrospect? But and were their personalities at all different before they got the burdens of being head coach?
Lombardi was always thought of as a very bright football guy, but there was anti-Italian prejudice at that time. You know, Italians were not looked upon as very smart or very good. We were the builders. We didn't run things. We worked for people. And Lombardi had been rejected by numerous colleges for head coaching jobs, including Wake Forest, who actually called him, Booster called him and said, look, I don't want you to have to go through this facade. That we're going to hire you. We will never have a coach down here with a vowel at the end of his last name. So that's how that was a real shocker to Lombardi, even for a guy who believed that his Italian heritage had worked against him. And he was devastated when Wellington Mara came to him and offered him the assistant's job in 1954 from Army, because he thought Wellington was calling for the head coaching job. And Wellington had actually wanted the Army head coach, Red Blake, as his head coach. And when Blake decided to stay, he went to Lombardi and he said, would you be the assistant? And Lombardi was absolutely devastated. So you had that working against him. But everybody looked at Lombardi as a brilliant football guy. He was a great, great teacher. And that goes back to his Fordham roots, you know, with the Jesuit learning and their emphasis on rote learning and everything. So there were a lot of influences from the priests that taught him at Fordham as to his teaching prowess. So he was known as a great teacher. Landry was already there. Landry had been a defensive back for Steve Owen with the Giants, and a great defensive back, great punter. And he was the translator, so to speak, for Steve Owen's strategy. Owen was not a detail guy. He would come up with the umbrella defense, let's say, to beat the Browns in 1950, shut them out. He would say, okay, this is the overall form that I want the defense to take. Tom, why don't you come up here and explain the ins and outs of it to the team? And Tom could do that. Tom was recognized as this computer-like mind and very, very smart man, very boring. he was a totally different personality than Lombardi, but very quiet, didn't say a lot. But he was brilliant as far as strategy goes, and seeing things within the scheme, and that's where. So when Howell took over, Howell immediately elevated Lombardi from simply a player who got up there and spoke at chalkboard sessions to a player coach. And for the first 2 years under Howell, Landry was a player coach. And then after 55, he hung him up and became just a regular defensive assistant.
More with Ernie Paladino on Lombardi and Landry coming up. We're back for our third segment with the author of Lombardi and Landry, how two of pro football's greatest coaches launched their legends and changed the game forever. That's Ernie Paladino.
I thought you had an interesting comment in the book talking about their teaching styles, that Lombardi was essentially teaching to the bottom 10% in terms of mentality to get the repetition and rote to work its way up, and Landry was teaching the top, or focusing on the top 10%, and the players had to work
That's
it
right.
its way down.
That's right. You know, Landry, like I say, he was very, very cerebral. Frank Gifford said he bore the heck out of you. you know, it didn't matter that some of the players really wouldn't understand what he was getting at, because the other players who did, the more intelligent ones, and I'm not talking that there was a big gulf between the smartest and the dumbest player on the Giants. Landry insisted on intelligence. That became a measurable in his later years as a Dallas head coach. He was one of the first to use intelligence as a drafting measurable. So the Giants' defense was not only athletically good, but they had wonderful, wonderful football minds. Andy Robustelli, the defensive end that they got in 56, was a tremendous football mind, and he just absorbed. His mind was like a sponge, and he and Lombardi used to drive to games together, and he just absorbed all of that defense that Lombardi would talk to him about, and he basically ran the defensive line for Landry. So he had some professorial entities on that defense. Sam Huff was brilliant, and guys like that. They were a very smart bunch.
Let me ask you, is it sort of perceptually accurate that you get a sense that Lombardi was like a tormented, driven soul, and Landry's sort of at peace with, you know, a born-again Christian, his fellowship of Christian mm-hmm. athletes? Is that sort of an accurate assessment of both?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Landry became a head coach quite by accident.
The thing is, the
biggest difference between the two of them is that Lombardi wanted to be a head coach of a team from the day he graduated Fordham. Landry never thought of himself as a head coach. He had a master's degree from Houston in industrial engineering, and he was going to go into the oil business. He just saw football as a way to pay off his college bills and raise his family for a while. He had absolute plans to leave football and go into the oil business until 56, when the success started happening, and he realized, he said, well, maybe I could be a head coach for a while. And, you know, when the Dallas opportunity came up, he said to his wife, we'll go home, I'll coach, I'll take the head coaching job for a while, make some money, they'll probably fire us in 3 years, and then I'll go into the oil business. So this whole thing was kind of like an accident for Tom Landry. Sadly, he never got into the oil business because he lasted 29 years in Dallas. But Lombardi was driven. Lombardi was constantly trying to get a job, constantly, whether it was a college or a head coaching job. He was driven. He was angry. He was he had all these emotions. He used to go to church every day and pray for patience because of what he had to do as a head coach or as a coach. It didn't jive with his Catholic upbringing. You know, he wasn't the man. He realized he wasn't the man that he wanted to be. But he had to do certain things as a coach. So Lombardi would had all these, this cauldron of emotion, and here's Landry just kind of sailing through. You know, he's
yeah.
cerebral, and whatever comes, and that's it.
I thought that was fascinating. I didn't know he was an industrial engineer, and he kind of became a systems type of coach. as well, you know, having had engineering systems training. I'm going to Lombardi. We talked about, or you talked about, his suffering discrimination because he was Italian. Did his temper hold him back from getting jobs too?
In some ways, I think his temper held him back from the college jobs, not the pro jobs, but the college jobs, because, you know, he was a driver. He was a loud driver, and Red Blake often cautioned him in his earlier years at Army. He said, Vinny, you can't talk to college kids like this. They have class. They've got other responsibilities. He said, you know, because Lombardi was have these Vesuvian explosions on the field, and he's you got to calm down. You got to, this is not the way you treat college kids. And to tell you the truth, I think that hurt him more than the Italian stuff. The Italian stuff could be a lot of perception, but I think the word got around that this guy's a real hothead. And, you know, you just didn't want that. Even the hardest drivers of the college game at that day of the day didn't melt down like he would, you know, throwing clipboards, throwing his hat, yelling and screaming and what have you. Gary Knoflick, the Green Bay tight end, said Lombardi worked us so hard that when he told you to go to hell, you look forward to the trip. You know,
they turned around a team that had a lot of talent on it, but that was underperforming. Let's talk about some of the guys. What was Gifford's Lombardi's impact on Frank Gifford?
Lombardi basically made Frank Gifford's career. Under Steve Owen, he had no idea how to use Gifford. So the guy was constantly on the field playing on both sides of the ball. He'd use him as tailback. He'd use him as defensive back. He was punting. Gifford said, I never got off the field. And in the meantime, the guy's taking a beating. And Gifford was constantly thinking about leaving the game. You know, he had some commercials, and he was having some success in Hollywood. And he says, "Look, I don't need this. I could go to Hollywood, make twice as much money, and not take the physical beating that I am, because I never got a rest." The minute Lombardi comes in, he takes Gifford aside. He says, "Hi, I'm Vince Lombardi. You're my halfback. You don't worry about defense anymore. You don't worry about kicking," although he did do some kicking for the Giants after that in pinches when the kicker was out. But he says, "You don't worry about anything else. You play halfback." And Gifford said that turned his career entirely around. He was able to concentrate on one position, and what Lombardi did with that position was absolutely wonderful and innovative. He started Gifford out on the halfback option, and then once Alex Webster got there, the power sweep came into being. And the power sweep that we all know, the Packers sweep, mm-hmm. with Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor, that all started with the Giants with Frank Gifford and Alex Webster. Isn't that amazing?
I was also, moving back to the defensive side of the ball, I was amazed at how many of the folks that Landry managed end up becoming defensive coaches themselves.
Sure. Dick Nolan played in the same backfield as Lombardi. Landry. The same defensive backfield as players. And Landry would tell him, you know, Landry was the first guy to institute keys and frequencies. He would study these films and realize that out of a certain formation, you could only do three things. Only one of three things was going to happen. So if you saw the wide receiver hug up close to the line, this was going to happen, and that. And he would tell Nolan on the field, he says, "Keep your eye on the fullback. Keep your eye on the fullback. This is what's going to happen." And Nolan would react and make tackles. And he became one of Landry's trusted defensive assistants in Dallas before he went on to coach the San Francisco 49ers. You had Andy Robestelli, who becomes a general manager for the Giants. He didn't have a great lot of success. But after Landry leaves, Wellington makes Robustelli the defensive assistant, and he splits that work with Harlan Savari, the linebacker, who eventually becomes the head coach of the Chargers. So there's a long, long tree from Landry assistants going on to greater things. The Landry players going on to greater things.
Back for our final segment with Ernie Paladino. Coming right up. And we're with Ernie Paladino, longtime sports writer, covered the Giants for over 20 years, here in our final national segment.
And you talk about him working within a hierarchy and a system. We go back to Lombardi. He was everything, and there was nothing else but there. You say he even took over the owner's parking spot when he got there.
Yes.
Did that set the franchise up, though, for not being able to sustain itself? And obviously we got Phil Bengston coming in there.
Well, you know, when Lombardi stepped down as head coach in 68, he handed it over to Phil Bengston, and then, you know, the big fall started. They didn't get back to the playoffs for quite a while. I think that's one of the dangers that you run into when you have, as Wellington said, a law unto yourself.
Yeah.
You know, there's one guy, and then when that one guy leaves, you know, things happen. But I think Green Bay was, I don't think they would ever regret the decision, because this was a franchise that was clearly the outback of the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, players used to greet new players by saying, you know, welcome to the end of the earth.
Circling back now to where we started, to the Giants, how did the Maras, you know, these two guys leave and Ali Sherman comes in, and then we end up with the famous 15 years of lousy football. In how do the Maras sort of rationalize what happened, losing two of the greatest coaches ever?
Well, you know, it's tough. John Mara, the current president of the Giants, it told me that had Wellington kept Lombardi, John's childhood would have been a heck of a lot different than what it turned out to be. He wouldn't have had to suffer quite so many of the barbs that his schoolmates and co-workers gave him every Monday. Wellington called it his greatest mistake, losing Lombardi. Oh, well, Lombardi was really the guy Wellington wanted, too. They had become close personal friends. You know, Lombardi is actually a godfather to one of Wellington's children. So Wellington really wanted Lombardi, but he was caught in a situation here. Jim Lee Howell had not given any intentions of any decision to step down after the 58 season. Of course, they lose the greatest game ever played. And, you know, I think if they had won, it would have been a different story, because Jim Lee would have retired right then. Jim Lee said he would have retired immediately if they had won the 58 championship game. But he didn't. You know, Lombardi had been waiting around for an offer. Well, he finally gets this offer from Green Bay, and it's a good one, where he can run the team. He can be a law unto himself. Encourages him to take it. He says, look, this is a good place. And he makes a deal with the Green Bay president, Dom Olenichuk. He said, look, take Lombardi, give him the job, but if ever Jim Lee steps down, we want the first rights to talk to him and bring him back. As time goes on, Jim Lee coaches the 59 season. They go back to the championship game. Now they've got three championship game appearances since 1956, and they win the 1956 championship. So you can't fire this man.
Yeah,
you can't fire him. Meanwhile, Landry gets the offer from the Dallas organization, and he goes even before Dallas has the team. 2 weeks after Landry is gone, Jim Lee says 1960 is going to be my last season. And Wellington is furious.
Yeah.
Well, Wellington, you know, why didn't you do this, you know, 2 months ago when we would have had a shot at least keeping Landry? They probably would have had to have paid him an exorbitant amount because Landry wanted to go back to Texas. He was Texas-born and bred, his wife, Texas. They wanted to raise their kids in Texas. So it's iffy if as to whether, you know, he would have stayed or not. But at least they would have had a shot at him. Now they don't have Lombardi and they don't have Landry, and they're going to lose Howell after the 60 season. Howell leaves after 60. Lombardi had gone to the NFL championship game with the Packers and lost to the Eagles. So Mara goes to Olenichuk and says, okay, the time has come. Jim Lee's gone. We want to talk to Lombardi. And Olenichuk says, I never agreed to that. He reneges on the deal. And it's a question of whether Lombardi would have come back anyway at the time because he knew he was building something very special in Green Bay. He had these great players. He loved his players. He loved his team. He loved the power and everything. So you have that aspect. The overall aspect is what do you do? And this is a problem that exists today, too. This is the decision that owners make today. You have a successful coach. He's just taken you to 3 championship games in 4 years. What do you do? You're going to fire him to hire an assistant, no matter how good those assistants are? Hiring an assistant is always a crapshoot. You don't know how it's going to turn out. There are many assistants. You know, North Turner is, yeah. You know, North Turner is, and North Turner and Wade Phillips are my two greatest examples of assistants,
yeah,
who should never be let within a five foot perimeter of the coach's office unless they're carrying a game plan or coffee. I just don't think they're very good head coaches, but they're brilliant. I mean, Norv is a brilliant, brilliant offensive coordinator. Wade Phillips is a brilliant, brilliant defensive coordinator, but they're bad head coaches. Same thing with Lombardi and Landry. There was no guarantee that these guys were on their way to iconic careers. They both had great heads on their show. They both had great leadership qualities. Do you fire the guy that just took you to 3 championship games?
I got it.
At least gets credit for 3 championship games. And, you know, how do you get rid of them?
We're out of time. It's been great. I got to ask you one question that's unfair and with only seconds to answer. But would Lombardi and Landry have been successful in today's NFL?
I don't know. I you know what? I think they both would have gotten out of the game. I don't think that either of them could have handled this free agent stuff and the way players have to be treated today. I think their heads would have exploded.
Well, that was a great hour with Ernie Paladino. His book is Lombardi and Landry, How 2 of Pro Football's Greatest Coaches Launched Their Legends and Changed the Game Forever. It's published by Skyhorse Publishing.
Thanks to Ernie Paladino. And again, this has been a tribute to the memory of Ernie Paladino, passed away too young. Great character, great integrity, and a great sports writer. And we're here to support his candidacy for the admission to the Westchester Hall of Fame. Ernie Paladino.